Welcome to the Mo Money, Mo Progress podcast. We bring you interviews with amazing people who share advice about how to make more money and manage what you got.
Welcome back to another episode of Mo Money, Mo Progress. My name is Gwen. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. And we have an absolutely incredible guest. We're bringing on the show today, Shannon McClay, also known as Financially Blonde Online. So when we started our podcast, or even way before it was even, you know, a hope that we could do this, I personally looked online to try and find inspiration. And Shannon McClay blew my mind. She has a podcast called Martinis and Your Money, where she has real conversations with financial experts and bloggers about how they manage their money. So I highly, highly recommend that you go take a gander, take a listen to her podcast. But a little bit more about Shannon before we share this really honest interview that we had together. So Shannon is a financial planner, and she left her traditional financial services firm to start her own company, Next Gen Financial. And she started because she felt that these financial services firms just didn't have the tools or the resources to help people like you and like me, people in their 20s and 30s, trying to start out and build assets, build that cash, and actually manage debt. Shannon shares tons of amazing tips on her blog, Financially Blonde, and through her book, Train Your Way to Financial Fitness. And of course, as I mentioned, her absolutely fantastic podcast, Martinis and Your Money. And stay tuned for her next endeavor, which is called The Financial Gym, because Shannon's whole thing is about being financially fit. And she's really committed to making this whole journey to becoming financially fit fun, easy, and accessible for you and for me. So grab your coffee, sit back and relax, and enjoy this conversation with Shannon McClay. Shannon, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Shannon, I am so excited that you're here. As I mentioned to you, I love your podcast.
Yay!
It is so good. I mean, like, I was kind of researching, trying to find interesting people who talk about finances in a way that I can understand. And I mean, when I stumbled across your podcast and you started your podcast with Martinis, I was like, I found her. And then it's
so much more interesting when you put a martini with it. It really is.
I mean, it also makes it a little bit less serious and more fun. Like you're making talking about money fun.
I mean, that's what I tell people, honestly, like on my podcast, that's me outside in my day-to-day life. Like my friends are like, this is totally you. I'm like, I know, it's totally me. I talk like that at the bar over a martini, you know, about money, life, whatever. I mean, that's just me. So why not put it on a podcast?
Oh man. Well, you found your target demographic in me. I am right there with you.
Yay. All my drinking fans. I love
yes,
them.
Yes. You're Canadian fans. And of course I'll spread the word up here. So yes, you start with martinis. I like to start with something a little bit more stressful. I'd like to start with a rapid fire round to get to know you in a different way. And then we'll get into your story and how you started Financially Blonde and your book and really all that good stuff.
I'm ready for whatever you're going to throw at me.
Okay. Oh, yeah. And I should also note to everyone that Shannon puts all the martini recipes on her website. Yeah. So, I mean, sure, if you want financial advice, go to Shannon's site. Or if you want really cool martini recipes, like warm martinis or like... What was that? Chai?
Chai martini was one of my favorite discoveries by my good friend Melanie at Dear Debt. And she's like, we're going to do a chai martini. And I was like, okay. And I love her to pieces because she's in Seattle and I'm in New York. And it was like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my time. It was 10 her time. And I was like, she's going to hate me that I'm totally throwing her under the bus, but I love her to death. So I said, are we drinking? You know, are we going to pretend? Like, what are we going to do? She's like, within 5 minutes, she sent me a text to my phone, a picture of her martini. And I was like, oh, all right. Like, just give me 2 seconds to shake mine up. I mean, I was ready. I didn't know. And then I knew I loved her, but I really, really loved her at that moment, 10 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, there's some, as a Canadian person, I don't want to stereotype my people, but we enjoy a drink, you know? Yeah. And I can appreciate a lady who's like, you know what? I'm going to have a drink before
noon. Let's do it. And actually, I just realized I said, oh, she's in Seattle. She's in Portland. So,
yes.
I mean, there we go. That martini did me for a little bit. I knew she was West. I mean, she's West Coast. So she was 3 hours ahead of me or behind me or ahead of me, whatever it is. And yeah, that's my kind of people, right? It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Exactly. She probably had a martini on one side and like an amazing coffee on the other side.
She did. She has a coffee warmer. She did.
Perfect. Oh man, I like where this is going already. Okay, so Shannon, let's get into this rapid fire round.
Shoot him, Gwen. I'm ready for you.
Alrighty. What is your greatest extravagance?
This is an interesting question because there's kind of like the pre-financially responsible me and the post-financially responsible me. And I talk about this a lot on my blog and who I am. I was one of those people like lifestyle inflation, investment banking job, spent everything I made kind of person until about 3 years ago when I kind of had my aha moment of maybe I need to make smarter choices because I don't want to work till I'm 80. So that's an interesting question because there would be like, so I'm going to answer it two ways. So the pre-financially responsible person of me, greatest extravagance was probably purses. It's a big purse fan. And not like crazy person. Like I have friends who are Louis Vuitton people. I am a Coach person fan. And every year I definitely indulge in at least one Coach bag between like $200 to $400. And so then post me, my greatest extravagance post the new financially responsible me was, and I blogged about this, a dress that I needed for an event last year. And I like toiled over it because I'm like, I have dresses, I could wear something, but I kind of needed something different. And I really didn't want to spend the money. I was like, I don't really need it. I could probably make something work. But I said, you know what? I'm going to give myself $30, right? I'm like, I'm going to give myself $30. I'm going to go to TJ Maxx and Marshall's. Those are my two kind of go-to places. And I'm going to see if I can make it happen. If not, you know, whatever. And I found this black dress for $25. And it looked great and felt great. I felt great in it. I was standing in line for this $25 dress, which I budgeted $30. So I was already under budget. And I was stressing about it. I was like, what am I doing? Do I really need this? Like, should I return it? This is a waste. And I was like this whole my mind was all over the place in line waiting to pay for this. And I thought I'm the craziest person ever because the financially responsible person me would be like, buy 8 of these dresses. Yes. Like, what the hell are you
doing? It's on sale.
Yeah. I mean, what are you even thinking? Like, there would be no stress. I mean, I literally probably would have found it in other colors. I mean, I bought 8 of them, but the post financially responsible me was like, what? Like, don't waste money. But I did. I paid the $25 for it. And I love that dress.
I love that. You went for it. You know, you don't want to deprive yourself. You were in the budget. You bought it.
Yeah.
You felt good about it. Yeah. Love it. What is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the word money?
Emotion. You know this because you've listened to my podcast and seen my blog, but I work with people I call it financial trainer. It's really financial planning for young people, really any age, but mostly between the ages of 20 and 40. And money is so emotional. And that's where I think the general market misses, the general financial services market misses how to help people with money because they want to tell you like, nuts and bolts, black and white, numbers, all this kind of BS. And there's just so much emotion that you can say something on paper and it'll make total sense, but you throw on some kind of emotional experience and forget it. It's just forget anything that's on paper. You know, I have a client who she's a 40-year-old doctor and she knows how much she should be saving. She knows how much she makes. She knows she's brilliant. I mean, brilliant. I love her to pieces. Brilliant woman. And she was going through a bad point in her life, broke up with a boyfriend and had some other challenges and just spent a ton of money on self-help books and all this other stuff. And I was like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And it was all emotional. I mean, she knew, like we met and she was like, I know I went off the rails. But it was totally emotional. And, you know, I was like, well, have you figured it out? Are you done? Is it out of your system? Because, like, let's get back on track. I mean, and sometimes you do have to go through those, that cathartic experience and let the emotions out so that you can get back to the black and white business of managing your money. But there's so much emotion with money. It's not even funny.
It's
so true. And I know a lot of people, I kind of say this as a joke to people, but they're like, no, I really do this. And so do I. But you spend money that you might not have in order to feel better that you don't have money. It's this weird cycle.
Yeah. It's depressing to not have money. I mean, come on. And you know it. And then that's what's so great. And I'm saying air quotes, great about credit cards, right?
Yeah.
That's why I have my credit card, to make me feel better.
Oh, yeah. It's like, it's free money. It's amazing. No, everyone, it's not free money. No. So what is your favorite financial tool or app that you use?
This is an interesting question because I don't have an official tool that I like to use. I have clients who use different things. I have my own system or whatever. I like anything that helps you track your expenses, that forces you to put in every last dime you're spending and forces you to hold you accountable. So there's like a free expense tracker app. I mean, there's all different apps for $2, expense tracker app. They have all different ones, but I mean, mint.com, there's a lot of things that offer that. I don't really care what it is. I just care that it forces you to put in your expenses. So, because that I think is one of the biggest ahas that my clients have. They always say, I have no idea where my money's going. And most people don't. I mean, especially with credit cards and debit cards, you just don't know. But when you have to stop and actually, okay, I just spent $6 on a coffee. I have to take out my phone and put in the $6. Like you start like, oh, okay, I just spent that. And you really start seeing it more. So I really like anything that forces you to track your spending.
Oh, yeah. I'm doing that right now. And even actually just got a new wallet where it's easy to put the receipts in the same place and not just like toss them in a bag. It's eye-opening stuff.
It's not pretty. Stuff.
No, especially for someone who likes to buy things. It's like, yeah, it's okay, not Gwen, no to the $6 coffee. What is something that you patiently saved up for to buy?
See, this is another interesting thing because the pre-responsible me was not patient at all. And I wrote about this and I write about this. I had no patience. I had a lot of credit. I had a great credit score. I do have a great credit. I had a great credit score, though, back in the day. And so I didn't. Wait, I mean, I was like, oh, I always said everything was a need when they weren't needs, they were wants, mm-hmm. But I need new hardwood floors in my den, in my house. I mean, there was no reason, but that's actually a big joke that my husband and I have, that these hardwood floors that we spent over $1,000 for, that like on this 12 by 12 room that did not need hardwood floors. It was the most ridiculous. But I always rationalize these things as need. And because I had credit cards, I just did it, right? I'm like, oh, I'll pay it off later. I know I'm going to get a bonus in February. So I'm just going to do it. So the pre-responsible me never was patient, never saved up, never had any kind of thought process around it. And the post-responsible me, I started a business a year ago. And I guess I would have to say that, I mean, for a year before I started it, I was getting myself together financially to prepare for starting the company because I knew it was going to cost money and it was going to be an investment to start my company to help young people with money. So my company was probably the thing I was the most patient with.
That's an amazing thing to save up for.
Yeah, to help other people. And it's been the greatest investment of my life. It will probably end up consuming my whole life savings. And yet it's the greatest investment of my life because the difference I see with my clients and the difference I make in their lives is like, why do I need money? I mean, it's the greatest thing ever.
Oh man. Shannon, I know you're only a year officially into it, but I can only see just exponential growth for you. And so I'm just calling it now, people. Actually, a quick side question on that. Something that comes up in a lot of different events, entrepreneurial events I go to, is women who are in a full-time job, but they want to start their business full-time. And there's this huge debate over how much money should you have saved in your bank before, say, quitting your job to pursue your side hustle or whatever it is full-time. Do you have any advice for people on that?
That's a really great question. So I think a financially responsible answer would be 1 to 2 years of your, really 2 years of your life expenses for that. And mm-hmm. And I'm saying that's really responsible. I didn't necessarily have exactly that amount, but it was such a huge passion for me that like it just weighed on my heart. I was like, I can't keep doing what I'm doing. I can't keep helping people who have more than $250,000 in assets make more money when there are people with $250 in assets who need a lot of help. So I just couldn't do it. So the answer, the responsible answer is I would say 2 years, because it really does take about 2 years to really get solidly your business to really take off. That's the responsible answer. The other answer is, you know what, if you've got something that is just, it's in your core, you're so passionate about, you're willing to just throw it all out the window because you're so passionate about it, then make it work. You know, if you don't have those 2 years, like make it work in other ways. And that's something I've been doing. So this was such a huge passion for me. I was like, you know, I'm going to cut back everywhere else I can so I can make it work. And that $25 dress was a huge expense for me because everything's going to the business. Everything was going to this passion of mine. So I just made it work in other areas.
That's great. I mean, that makes sense to me. Like when I hear you say that, it just resonates. Because yes, I mean, responsibly speaking, two years, lots of runway. But it's amazing to see what can happen when in your core, you're like, this is what I have to do.
Yeah. I mean, I joke that I'm going to be like Sarah Blakely, like she was living out of her car, you know, the Spanx founder. I mean, I'm like, I'm going to be one of those people I gave up everything. But those are the people, like when you hear those stories, I mean, they found their way. And if you believe in it so much, then, I mean, and I do. So it's like everything else, it all like falls into place. I mean, so I didn't get a new dress. I'm not crying over it. You know, I joke with people last year, 2014, I made the least amount I've ever made in my life. And I was the happiest I've ever been in my life. So I'm okay with that. Like I'll live, it's fine. But yeah, so it's hard. I mean, if you're really passionate, it's really hard to like keep doing that other job, especially, you know, when you see the need and you want to go forward with it, it's really hard to avoid that, your gut, because it just overwhelms you. Oh, yeah. It really does. It's hard to shut it up. At least mine was.
Don't shut it up. Let it speak. let me ask you this, Shannon. What is a financial book or a resource that you really love, that's your favorite, whether when you were kind of growing up, you read this book and it changed your life, or someone that you really admire right now who's in the financial world, who's guiding you?
It's going to be really cheesy. This is really, I'm not trying to self-promote, but I really love the book that I wrote, Train Your Way to Financial Fitness, because I wrote it because I didn't find anything like that out there. And I wrote it going after a different kind of audience, and because there's so much financial advice out there that's about like how to invest your money and how to do all these things, and there's just not that much advice on how to build your money that speaks to you in a different way. So that was how I wrote my book. So I am actually a pretty big fan of my own book, but if you take that away, I really do love, it's funny, I read The Millionaire Next Door when I was in college, and I know people talk about this all the time. And I read it. It's so funny. I had to read it for one of my classes in college and it meant nothing to me. You know, I mean, I read it. I was like, oh my God, what losers, right? Like they never go out. They like frugal people. Like I was a business major at the time. So I was like, I've got investment banking trajectory. I'm going to be driving a Lexus. Like I thought it was the most ridiculous book ever. Like, and now fast forward 13 years later, I'm like, that's a great book. I really wish I listened to that book. I remember at the time just thinking, this is so ridiculous. I can't believe I'm even reading it. But now I've since read it. Like, again, like the pre-post me, I'm like two sides of my life. Yeah. So there's like the pre-me and the post-me. And so I really like that book. And it's true. I mean, it's so true because I've seen it as a financial advisor, planner, trainer, whatever you want to call me. I see it all the time. I have clients who make $50,000 a year and have more money all over the place than clients who make $2 million a year. And it is the millionaire. It is the frugal person, the responsible person. It's so not sexy and it's so not fun, but yet it's so true. So at The Millionaire Next Door, there's a reason why it's so popular.
I have to say something I was reading about you, or maybe I heard it on the podcast, is that you are like the Jillian Michaels of the financial world.
Yeah.
I love that because, I mean, I feel like your book is so important because it's true. Like no one's teaching people how to build the foundation. It's more like, you know, how do you invest when you don't even have a foundation yet?
Yeah.
Like, that's a nightmare.
Yeah. I mean, most of my clients' problems, and I always say this, investing is really easy. It's not rocket science. There's a lot of people who want to convince you it is. It's not. The hardest part is having the money to invest. I mean, that's it. getting the money in the bank account is the hardest part. And most financial books do not address how do you even get the money in the account.
So everyone, you have to get a copy of Shannon's book, Train Your Way to Financial Fitness on Amazon. To understand I'm sure we won't have time to get deep into it, but I mean, we all need to get a copy of that book. And my last kind of quicker question, Shannon, is if you were gifted $10,000 today, no strings attached, what would you do with it?
I would invest it.
How would you do it?
So I just did a podcast on investing for millennials, and I talk a lot about knowing what money you need for where, and because you have different goals in life and you have to understand what you need the money for. So for me at this point, the $10,000 I would need in my retirement account. So I would put it in probably a target date fund or an asset allocation fund that would have 80% stock and 20% bonds. Even though I'm 36, I still would be pretty aggressive about that. And if I did need it, it would be in a brokerage account, and I would invest it in probably 50% stock and 50% bonds. It really doesn't matter how you invest your money at the end of the day, how you pick your stocks and bonds. The important thing is knowing when you need the money and what it's going to do for you. So money you don't need for 30 or 40 years, like just off to the races, lots of stock, little bit of bonds and other things. And then the money you need in the next 5 to 10 years, little bit mixed, almost 50-50 stocks and bonds.
Sounds good.
That's my own personal opinion, though. I have to say, I can't. Offering specific investment
advice. Yeah, you're like, disclaimer.
Yeah, I'm like, let me disclaim the heck out of myself right now.
One thing I'm noticing is just the way that you talk about money and investing, you have such an air of just calm about it. You know, you're just like, yeah, I do this and I would do this. And it's not like, you know, what I see with a lot of people who are coming up trying to deal with all their finances. It's like this frenzy. So it's like, if you want some calm advice, friends, go over to Financially Blonde.
Easily get stressed out, right? But life's too short. I mean, life is way too short to stress out about these things. And the thing with investing, and I was freaked out about investing. I mean, I get it. I totally get it. But the thing with it is, with investing, everything that goes up goes down, and everything that goes down goes up. It's kind of like understanding the universe and the laws of physics, you know? So that's what investing is. Things go up, things go down. You make money when they're up, and you can lose money when they're down, or you can make money when they're down. And you just have to, if you get some kind of responsible approach around it, it doesn't have to be stressful. It's really not that difficult. You just have to kind of, you take the emotion. I say this is the hard part. This is the hardest part, taking the emotion out of it. Here I go with the emotions of it. Because when the markets are up, everybody's like, why would I sell? Why would I sell? This is so great. Apple's going to 1,000. You know, why would I sell? And then Apple goes to 400 and people are like, oh, I should have sold. And then they get depressed because everything keeps going down. They're like, I should just sell. I should sell. I should sell. When it goes down, I'm like, no. That's the time we need to buy. So it's the emotion that's the hardest part. The actual doing of it is not that difficult.
So yes, if anyone has investing questions, Shannon's your gal, obviously. So Shannon, let's go back a few years. Tell us about your first job out of college. What did you do when you graduated?
Yeah, so back when I thought that the millionaire store was an awful and ridiculous and a waste of my time, I was in college getting a business degree and wanting to work in finance. And I did. I was fortunate. I graduated in 2000. And so I was looking for jobs in the fall of 1999, which is literally probably the greatest time to be looking for a job, especially in finance and especially being a woman. And so I had like 5 job offers before Thanksgiving break, which is November in the US. And I was like, I had 5 offers. So I picked the one that was the most money and the most interesting to me. And I started in June of 2000, and it was on a trading floor with a large bank. And I was on the trading floor. There were 260-ish people on the trading floor. There were about 15 women of that 260-ish. And I remember at 22, I was like, first of all, that was the best I've ever looked in my life. And meanwhile, like when I put myself back in that, I thought I was heavy. I just had so many insecurities, and I had so many insecurities about being, I mean, I didn't have insecurities about being a woman, but I had insecurities about being on the floor and being looked at. You know, I was like, oh my God, I have to go to the bathroom. Everybody's going to look at me. They're going to think, like, how long is she in the bathroom? These things went through my mind. I freaked out about them. And meanwhile, like, there were guys on the trading floor who told my boss that I was a, quote, decoration on the floor.
Yay.
Which, you know what? I love that kind of stuff. It just motivates me. So I was like, you think I'm a decoration? Okay, I'll show you. So that was, I really actually ended up loving working on a trading floor. I loved being a rose among thorns, as people would say. I had no issues with that over time. And I did that I worked on different trading floors and in investment banking and institutional banking for about 12 years, and then started looking at becoming a financial advisor. Because I say I needed an advisor because I was married, a kid, needed to buy a home. I wanted somebody to help me with my money. And I was working for this firm at the time that it was a very large retail investment advisory firm. And I realized that about 80% of financial advisors were men. Mm-hmm. And still the true. And so 80% are men. And so there's nothing wrong with that. There is absolutely nothing wrong with men. And I wrote this in my book. I birthed one. I married one. Like, I love men.
Yes.
Love men. But I was like, it just seems wrong. Like, it's so skewed to men. And I don't like boys clubs. So I was like, you know what? If you can't beat them, join them. Like, I can't bitch about it unless I do something about it. So I became a financial advisor. And then I became the worst financial advisor ever, because I loved people with no money versus my clients with money. Yeah. And I love all my clients, and I love people that my clients with money are fantastic, but there was something different about helping somebody who didn't have money to me, and, you know, $500, $1,000, whatever they had. And they would come to me because they knew as a financial advisor, I wasn't 50 years old and gray and white male. And so, you know, they'd ask me for help. And I remember after this one meeting with one of my, I called my pro bono clients, she said to me, looked me straight in the eye, and she's like, you are saving my life. And I left that meeting and I was like, I can't, this is with the gut thing, right? I can't keep helping. I can't lose my soul. And not that I was losing my soul, but I can't just help people with money make more money. I just can't do that anymore, right? When I can save somebody's life, I can't. So
I just got chills when you said that, because there's very few industries where someone will say, you're saving my life.
Right? Yeah. I mean, my dad's a surgeon, right? My dad, I say that to him and it's like, yeah, done. I mean, of course. And I joke, I said, my dad saves lives, you know? And I always said that because I had a job in investment banking and banking. And I always said, I'm like, look, I'm not saving lives. I'm just making money. And I used to say that all the time. I'm not saving lives. I just make money. But then when I got that glimpse of, like, I could save lives, it was like, whoa, like, how do I say no to this? It was just that gut thing. I couldn't sleep. I had to do it.
Tell us about, you mentioned the aha moment that you had. Can you tell us about that and really the origin story and how you figured out, you know, I'm going to create my company. I'm going to create Financially Blonde. Like, how did that all really start?
So when I became a financial advisor, I had plenty of clients with money. And then I kept meeting these pro bono clients. And I thought, I really want to help them. Like, I want to find a way to help them. And so the concept of my business started coming to me. And my aha moment was realizing I wanted to help them, but then realizing I couldn't because my lifestyle was so inflated because I had this investment banking job and I was used to spending money, making money and spending money. Mm-hmm. And I had no wiggle room to make that jump or that decision to help people and make less money because I needed that paycheck to keep funding my lifestyle. And that was my aha moment of, I need to change my life, because I really wanted to help people. And because of all the poor financial choices I made in my life, I couldn't, because I needed the paycheck to pay the bills to keep a roof over my head. So made those changes over about a year and then left the firm and started my own company. And it's funny, the impetus for Financially Blonde was that I was, when I was at that firm with the investment advisory firm, I wanted to start a newsletter for women, because I wrote this one email, I think, to a few, and it got spread out to a bunch of my friends and clients and all these other people. And they were like, oh, this is so great. You explain this in English. Like, you should do a regular newsletter. This is wonderful. And I was like, oh, great. And so I came up with this idea. I was like, oh yeah, I should do a monthly newsletter. This will be awesome. I would love to reach out to be a great way for me to network and get my name out there and all this stuff. So I was trying to come up with the name of the newsletter. And actually, it was my husband who came up with Financially Blonde. I love the movie Legally Blonde.
Yes.
Reese Witherspoon. So it totally comes from that. And I love that, you know, she was a blonde, but a smart blonde. And I love that, that I've been blonde. Well, I've been born a I was born a blonde. And
full circle.
Yeah, I was born blonde. I started skewing to more strawberry blonde when I was in high school and college. And then when I graduated college, I became a more artificial blonde, but I'm a blonde at heart. So I always love, I love being a blonde, and I love surprising people with my intelligence. And I kind of use it to my favor whenever I want, because I would always say, oh, I'm just being a dumb blonde. You know, and I joke. And my this one boss one time, he's like, you are so not a dumb blonde. Stop saying that. And I was like, no, I would like to use it, because then I keep people, like, I get to use it in my favor. But anyway, so I embrace the blondness. I love that movie. So my husband said, you should be financially blonde. And I was like, that's a great name. I love it. So I came up with, and I had that little caricature made and went to my compliance officer. I was like, I want to do this newsletter, want to call financially blonde, want to do this. And he was like, no way. There's no way you can send this out, because of all the compliance things, like all that kind of stuff. And they were like, no, you can't do it. So they said you could send an email. And the email got so whittled down and watered down that I said, okay, I did one email, and it just was like, it was too much work to kind of get through compliance. So I said, one day when I leave here, I am going to resurrect Financially Blonde. So that was the impetus for the blog. I said this, I literally started that like a month after I left the company, and I was like, that's going to be my blog name, and that's it. So that was how the blog started. Blog and the company started around the same time, around the early fall of 2013.
I gotta ask you, there's a lot of people that, you know, they're in, say, a very like black and white kind of role, but then you want to go out and do something creative that's really all you. You know, Financially Blonde's like a very fun brand. What was it like for you when you first started to share with your friends or with people, hey, I'm starting this new brand, it's completely different, you know, what was that experience like for you?
You know, it's funny. I mean, everybody who knows me is like, oh yeah, like, it's totally you. That was like no brainer. So the people who know me were like, yeah, you are that person, because you have been in finance. You can do the difficult things. You're smart, but you also have fun with it. And you're on the inside of your own joke. So they, like, the people who knew me were like, that's absolutely total great fit. The funny thing is the people who don't know me, and the people who, you know, when I first came out with my blog, or I think sometimes people who see it and they're like, I don't get it. Like, what are you trying to say? You're not smart, or you are smart, or you're blonde. Like, what are you doing? Actually, even my publisher was like, I don't get this. I don't get it. You know, and I was like, okay. Like, meanwhile, everybody who knows me is like, oh yeah, so you. Yeah. Like, that's you. And actually, even my publisher wanted me to stop the blog, because they're like, I don't know if that really fits with you and whatever. And the way I describe the blog and that side of me, and even the podcast, the Martinis and Your Money, it's all me. And the blog and the podcast are like my hangout spots. You know, that's where, if we're sitting around, hanging around, having a martini or just chit-chatting, we're going to be having it at the blog or the podcast. And that's like my fun side of me. Like, on my blog every Monday, I have Music Mondays, where I take a song and I make a financial lesson from it. And I remember when I first started blogging, people were like, F, is she doing? Like, who is this person? And what is Music Mondays? This, because I'm in personal finance circles, and they were like, you know, Monday was like, I don't know, budgeting and saving and 10 steps for, you know, whatever. And then here I am every Monday with Music Mondays. Like, what the heck is that all about? And I just didn't care. Mondays is one of the biggest days for blogs. And I remember for the first, I don't even know, 6 months of my blog, I had the worst turnout on Monday. Because people, I think, just refuse to read them. And I'm like, if you read it, you'll, like, it's fun. Like, there's, I have more personal finance knowledge in my Music Mondays than probably the rest of my week on my blog. But people who just didn't want to see past that, and I was like, that's fine, don't. But now it's like, now I have people like, oh, I love when it's Music Monday. Like, I love Mondays because I know your blog's going to be different. You're not going to be like, here's how to save on groceries. Or you might, but you're going to, your blog's going to be food and my, like, money, money, money from ABBA or something like that. And that'll be about saving groceries. But
it's, you know, if the people who are reading it didn't understand, I can't, like, say that makes so much sense to me. When you know, you read blogs where it's like, start saving and start creating your budget, when you're in a place where, you know, say you have a lot of student debt, or maybe you're not even making, say, like $30,000 a year yet, and someone's telling you, budget, budget. You're like, I can't even live now. Like, how am I supposed to budget? So the fact that you can make it kind of fun for people to start caring is...
Yeah. And budget, I said budget. I did a Music Monday call from the song Bad Reputation by Freddie Johnston. And I said about all these words that have a bad reputation, and budget was one of them, budget, frugal. And it was about all these like words in personal finance that have a bad reputation. And it's true, like budget has a bad reputation. And the thing is, like, it's just a bad reputation. But if you communicate it properly and change the way that you say it or change it up, then people do it. Like, my clients are all on budget. They don't necessarily know they are. They're just on a different kind of budget. So, I mean, I hate the word budget myself personally. It's like diet. Like, nobody wants to go on a diet. Nobody wants to go on a budget. So what most of my clients are on are what I call, what in the technical community would call, the goals-based budgeting. And that's where I like, because it goes back to the emotional side of it, where I set a goal for them. And it's usually saving or debt reduction, whatever the goal is. And that's what we're focused on. So we're focused on that one or two or three goals. And if we're, and I would say them, if you're hitting your goals, then I'm not going to look at the rest of what's happening with you. Like, as long as you're hitting your goals, then I don't really care if you're eating out. I don't really care that you bought that dress. I don't really care if you got the new shoes. I just want to know you're meeting your goals. You're meeting your goals, then great. Going back to that doctor client, she's a really funny one. She had her goals and she was meeting them, but like spending everything else. And I'm like, could have been better. Like, I know I said I didn't care about the rest. And it was like, then every meeting I would raise her goals because I was like, okay, I'm going to raise your goal. And every time she would meet her goals, but then she'd just spend everything else. So the joke was I just have to keep raising her goals because she's very goal oriented and she'll achieve her goals. But everything beyond that is like, forget it. So all my clients are on budgets. They just don't really know it.
I love that though. It's amazing how many, you know, smart women who are very goal oriented, but no one's actually told them this is your goal. I want you to save this much. So you actually doing that really, I can imagine, really lights the fire for all these like hyper ambitious women.
Yeah, well, that's half the battle, right? I mean, it's like I tell people about that your money is being, or your life goal, your journey in life, and you're on this road trip. And if you don't know where you're going, if you don't have the end goal, then you're just going to drive around in circles and get lost for a long time and waste time and energy. And part of the biggest thing I provide to my clients is I give them the specific targets. Like, you got to go to Ohio. You've got to go to British Columbia. You've got to go to Vancouver. You have to go here. And giving them those specific things, it makes it so much more clear, because then they know, oh, okay, now I know where I need to get to. I didn't even know where I needed to get to. Most people don't.
I know. And that's why they need to go to your site. So I have three more questions for you, and then I'll let you get back to the fam jam and Saturday and the martinis. We say that jokingly, Shannon, and even in Shannon's podcast, she's like, please, if you're drinking, drink responsibly, don't drive. Yeah, it's a fun thing, everyone, you know. So tell us about your book. What inspired you to write it? And tell us a bit about, you know, the process of you kind of sharing your story in such a vulnerable way to everyone.
Train Your Way to Financial Fitness, my book, started a year and a half ago. And it was really born out of my financial planning practice of seeing people and clients and seeing that I was giving them goals or whatever and telling them things to do. And things weren't happening. And I felt like I was missing something with them, or like I'd give them goals and every quarter they would never make them. And I'm like, what's happening? Like, what's going on behind the scenes? And then working with some of my pro bono clients and seeing what's really happening behind the scenes and realizing again that the people are in different spots, and giving blanket financial advice, just, it's not helpful. Like, you can't just say save 15%, do this, do that. People are coming from different places for different reasons. And so I just started writing the book kind of on a whim. Like, this is the advice I would give to people if anybody asked me. And the way I structured the book is that it starts with a quiz to ask, you know, what your financial fitness level is, because I love tying money and finance with personal fitness, because I used to be 50 pounds heavier after I had my son. I was weighed over 200 pounds and I'm 5'5". It was not pretty. And I needed to lose weight. And it took me 5 years to kind of get to that point. And people would say, oh, it's just baby weight. I'm like, but my son's 5. Like, he can read. He's not a baby. So I really had to get on it. So I did. And I lost 50 pounds. pounds. And
that's amazing, by the way.
And the thing is that it wasn't an overnight journey. It wasn't easy. I mean, it was really difficult, and I still struggle with it. I'm still always having to, you know, watch myself and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I joke about the martini drinking. I can't really drink that many of them because I know the calories that are in them. And if I didn't work out, you know, it's so many choices, but I saw a lot of ties with money and finance and the similarities. So that was kind of where the book came from. And it starts with a quiz, and from based on the quiz results, you're either financially fit, financially skinny, or financially fat. And financially fit people, they're doing everything, not doing everything right. They're doing a lot of things right. But I say even fit people need help. So there's different things for them. And then it's split up into different sections. So you don't have to read the whole book, which is great. And you just have to read the section that applies to you. So, you know, there's financially fit, financially skinny people live paycheck to paycheck. They're having a tough time saving money. Most people fall into that category. And then there's financially fat, which is just like, you can't save, you got a credit problem. You're just like all over the place. And I was financially fat. I was physically and financially fat 5 years ago.
Turned it around.
Yeah. And the thing is with both, with money, with fitness, whatever, you can turn it around. You can absolutely turn it around. There's nothing that you can do financially or physically, physically short of like killing yourself. There's nothing you can do that can't be undone. I mean, you can. It's just a matter of how much time and energy and commitment and drive it's going to take to undo it. But you can totally undo it. And so the book was really like, here's how you either undo this and kind of get yourself into a different place, or how do you improve where you're already at? And, you know, and it goes through like the emotions and the decisions and like, okay, so you can't spend. Well, and I have exercises for each section, financial exercises. And for the financially fat people who are financially fat and even skinny people have a lot of emotional issues that are trickling through their money. And I address those. So it's like, okay, you can't spend money. And then, you know, or here's how you rationalize spending. And then I literally have the follow-up exercises like, okay, you didn't spend that money. How do you deal with that? Because it's one thing to say you can't buy that purse, right? That's easy to say, and you won't. You'll say, okay, I can't buy that purse, right? And you'll move on and whatever. You'll get in your car and you'll be like, I really wanted that purse. I hate that I don't have the money to buy the purse, you know, and that's where the emotions come in. So I literally am like, here's what you do when you just said no, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh,
so
that's so good. That is so
great.
Try
to address it all and help you build your wealth and live a great life. And it's totally possible. It just takes work. I mean, my clients want their financial picture to turn around on a dime. And I'm like, well, what are you doing about it? Right? Mm-hmm. Like our money situation's not going to change if we just keep doing the same old thing. I mean, I wasn't going to lose weight if I kept eating pizza like I was and like it was going out of style and Chinese food and drinking and all that kind of stuff. I can't keep doing the same things and expect different results. I mean, you've got to work at it. And you have to work on your money. And most people don't work on their money. They'll work on their physical fitness. They'll work out. They'll go to the gym. They'll spend 20 minutes, 40 minutes at the gym every day. How much time do you spend on your money every day?
Wow. That's like really mind-blowing to think about.
Right? Like, how do you expect your money situation to get better when you don't spend any time on it? I mean, come on.
There's two things I just have to touch on for that. I mean, if you're listening to this podcast right now, if you've got to this point in time, I mean, you're showing the willingness to want to make the change. And I feel like any change requires willingness first, you know. So Shannon, what would you say to people who might feel just a bit overwhelmed? You know, they understand the message now. Okay, I need to make a change, but mm-hmm. I'm not really sure where to start. So what would be a small action item that you would suggest to the person listening to this podcast of how they can get started?
Well, I think the first thing is to understand that it's baby steps, right? No matter how much change you have to do, the step one is understanding that it's baby steps. And if you have a willingness, that's the biggest key is saying, I want to make a change. And then two is realizing that you really kind of have to get mentally prepared for it. Because again, just like with losing weight, like I wasn't going to lose 10 pounds in a day. I mean, that just didn't happen. I lost 50 pounds over 8 months. I lost maybe a half a pound a week. That's not a lot, but I had to realize this is going to be a long road and I'm going to have ups and downs along the way. And I just have to mentally prepare for it. So I always tell clients that like that it's, you know, commitment is huge. And I'm so glad that, you know, meeting with me or listening to podcasts or reading blogs, that's step one. And then two is like realizing it's a long journey and then breaking it down, because You're not going to save $10,000 in a day. You're not going to pay down $10,000 of debt in a day. So how do you make that, you know, break that down into baby steps that kind of help you along the way? And not to, again, sell my book, but I talk about that too, like the process of it and preparing for the journey and how do you get through the journey and avoiding debt fatigue or debt repayment fatigue or saving fatigue. And, you know, there's a whole... it's a whole process. It's not overnight. And that sucks because we all want immediate results. Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, we all do. But, you know, if you commit to it and you like, and you know, and know that you're going to have ups and downs. I have clients who get set back for different things. I mean, life just happens and they'll get down and I'm like, get back up. I mean, keep going. Like you can't, it's not, you will, it is not a straight journey. You will not like say today, I'm going to get myself together and I'm going to save $10,000 by the end of the year. I'm so inspired by this podcast. It's going to happen. And then you're going to get 2 months in and something's going to happen, a wedding, you're going to travel somewhere. I don't know. And credit card bill, health bill, something's going to happen. And then you're going to want to just be like, forget it. Yeah. Like, what was I even saying? $10,000. And that's the time where you need to be like, pick yourself back up and like put your big girl, big boy panties on and deal with it.
What do you do in that moment when, you know, you've been doing great for 2 months and then suddenly you're just like, F this. I am done. I am just going to go crazy shopping online.
Yeah. What do? I mean, I drink a martini. Maybe I'll cry in the shower and have a little like self-pity fest.
Yeah.
But you know what? Sometimes you do need to have that. Like there are a lot of people who have a great willpower and they're like, no, you know, I'm not going to do that. And then there's some people who need to like let it go and have that indulging moment. Like that one client, she spent a bunch of money. I don't advise that. I think what I like to do when I see clients and I encourage them to do is create a reward system so that you have that built-in support for like when you reach your goals, like if you reach your goal, your things you've been cutting back on, you can indulge in bits and pieces and stuff like that. I like for clients to build in that. And then for clients who need to indulge and have a pity party, sometimes you have to do that. I mean, I don't judge my clients. And I get it. Like, they're always like, did you see that trend? I had to, you know, and I get it. They're like, I had to go. I had to buy that. And I get it. So, but it's like, and it's just like when you're eating, like, I had to eat that pie. Okay. Yeah. I had to eat the pie. Well, now what are you going to do? You just ate a pie. I mean, so you can't keep eating pies, you know? So that's where my Jillian Michaelsness comes in because I'm like, okay, that's fine. You ate the pie. How are you going to correct for that pie eating and get yourself back on track? Because it really is, like I said, not everything you do can be undone. So it's fine. You splurge, you want to do. Okay, well, what can you return? You know, what do you really need? I mean, I've seriously done that with clients. All right, bring back this. What are you going to sell? Like, what do you have in your closet you could sell to make up for that? Have you taken another job? I had one client who she was doing such a great job saving and then spent a bunch of money on this trip to Europe with her mom. And I was so angry with her. Because I was like, we're just getting yourself back on track. And then you just blooch. And it was one of those, she had to do it. It was a life goal, like all this stuff. And I was like, oh, okay. So I said, what are we going to do now? You know, you did it. And she was just like, and she spent so much time rationalizing why she did the trip. And I'm like, okay, we're done talking about the trip. It's done. You already paid for it. What are we going to do to fix it? And literally, she has a very like pretty good paying job where she lives. She ended up getting a weekend job at Target to make up for that money she spent and to give herself spending money on her trip. And it was not, you know, she was like, this would be embarrassing for me, you know, that I'm working in Target. And I was like, well, you know, that was her solution. And she ended up, now she's back on track and she had the money for that trip and then some. And she's like, I was really tired. I hated myself, but I did it. You know, I did it. And same thing, you know, you eat a pie, like, all right, you're gonna have to work out a lot. You're gonna have to eat a lot of salads after that to get off the weight from the pie. And you just have to do it. If you know, and every time you eat that salad, think about how good that pie tasted. You know, hopefully you enjoyed it.
There's gotta be a saying. We know that saying, it's like nothing tastes as good as skinny feels.
Skinny feels, yeah.
Oh, it's kind of bad.
I think that all the time. Nothing feels as good as financially fit feels.
That's true. Nothing feels good as like buying something that you know you can afford. Oh my God, that's a feeling and a half to be I can buy this thing that's expensive, but it's not like, can I afford this? It's like,
it's not going to kill me.
I saved up for it. Wow. And Shannon, where can people connect with you or, you know, hire you if they're like, oh my God, Shannon's my girl, Martini's blonde, New York. Oh my God. How do people get in touch with you?
How do people find me? Well, my company site is Next Gen Financial. And they, I'm in the process of making it easier for them to hire me because I'm in the process of raising money to create my next company, which is called The Financial Gym. And you'll see more on that in a little bit, which will be the place where you can go and get and stay financially fit. And I'm really excited about that. But Next Gen Financial is where they can find me now. And then Financially Blonde is where I blog, and that's financially-blonde.com. And my podcast is Martinis and Your Money, and that's on iTunes. And you can also find it through my blog on Financially Blonde.
I am so excited for all the things that are, not things, all the amazing endeavors you're taking on this year to really help people who are stuck and people who want to just, you know, grow and make money and love their life even more. So Shannon, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Gwen.
Have a magical day, and we'll talk to you all soon.
Thank you for listening. To find more interviews and tips to help you make Mo money, go to momoneymoprogress.com.